The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Thursday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network. VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. All from Bar Canada at the D. It's a numbers game. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, producer number 9. So much more than a producer. What's happening?
Not much, man. How you doing?
Man, let me just say this. Royals bet not looking too good after last night. That's the first thing. We'll get into that here momentarily. I do want to say, of course, it's Thursday. You know what that means. Crackman, unscripted with the Crackman, Bill Krakenberger. By the way, he does not deserve enough credit. That's not what I meant to say. He doesn't get enough credit is what I meant to say. He doesn't get enough credit for showing up every Thursday excited and ready to go. It doesn't matter what time of year.
Yeah, I think we pay him just enough.
Whatever we're paying him, it is, you're right, appropriately low. Okay, so we have Craigman coming up. Also, Sweet Lou Finicaro, Gamble Lou, UFC 304, baby. You excited? Big weekend.
Yeah, actually, yeah, this is a great fight card, actually. Yeah.
Will you bet on this, by the way?
Yeah, I probably will.
I think so, too.
You know me. I'm in and out of UFC. I think we've successfully dragged you in a little bit more over the past couple years.
Well, but I think I did what most casuals did, which is, hey, it's the pandemic. It's the only thing on. Let's start betting UFC.
Exactly, yeah. So I probably don't watch it or bet it as much as I used to, say 5, 6, 7 years ago. But these kind of cards, these are can't miss ones for me.
But you're tailing, right?
I'm completely
tailing. So what if we have Jordan on tomorrow too, mm-hmm. probably? So what if Lou and Jordan cross?
Oh, yeah, it's usually a bet for me. Those two match on something.
If they match, but what if they're different?
They just cross it off, move on.
Obviously, duh.
I don't when you're tailing people you respect like that, I respect them both.
Yes.
That if they are head to head,
that's what I'm saying.
Then it's an easy, okay, I'm not even playing it.
I would agree. By the way, what's going on here? Maybe I should button this. Boop, 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 boop. It's a button. This is a button moment. Boop, boop, boop. All right. Okay. See, now that looks too high, though, on the button, right? Okay.
Yes, it does. had it right the first time.
I think I did. Okay. Button height is the underrated part of when a guy you think is trying to show his chest or not. He's not. The button is in a different spot.
It's always back to Seinfeld. He nailed it.
Did he do that bit?
It's the bit in the it's the first episode ever and the last episode.
Oh,
they
I didn't
bring
know
it
that.
Up. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's good knowledge.
Remember like they're in the jail cell or something in the last episode?
Horrible finale.
Yeah, yeah.
Horrible
they bring it finale. Up. It's the second button height on button-down shirts. You can never get it right.
All I remember from the finale is that Elaine got into Tufts. It was her safety school. That's all I remember from that. And, of course, we will continue with our NFL division by division. Today, sadly, and I mean this with respect to fans of all these teams and for those who have bets, sadly, it is the NFC South, which is honestly the most comical division in all of football. But we will get into it. And, again, it's football preview guide season. VSiN has our own out, VSiN.com/guide. The fellas did a great job with it. Adam Burke, Zach Cohen, Matt Humans, everybody, Wes Reynolds, everybody who wrote for it. It was fantastic. We had Cleve on talking about his preview guide. Warren Sharp will be here in a couple weeks. Aaron Schatz, this is his weekend, so I am just full on into the FTN Almanac. Aaron Schatz's 2024 FTN Almanac. And so it's NFC South weekend. God, I can't get that time back.
I got to give a shout out to the Deep Dive boys. They're doing incredible work. They are doing team-by-team previews of minimum an hour-long pod on every single team.
That is truly the deep dive.
Yes. I have been working my way through some of them. I thought a very, very great conversation between Drew and Andy on the Philadelphia Eagles on their latest one today. Because
Drew likes the Eagles, right?
No, he's a little bit down on
him. I'm with him.
Yeah, you know, down compared to others, right?
Yeah, that's me.
Which I would describe you as well. And then I think Andy felt very much like me, where you're trying. It's just funny hearing the arguments back and forth about a team that, you know, is still a good team, right?
I think the FTN, and we said this with Aaron on, so I'm not just saying it when he's not here, but they're the writing and the incisive use of the data to get to the main sort of point that the average fan doesn't see about each of these teams is great. Mm-hmm. Just to give context, and of course we juxtapose it against the betting lines, which we'll do here momentarily. The headline coming up: they don't like the Falcons as much as you do. That's probably it. They got the Falcons defense number 32. So Let that let your head explode, as he told us earlier this week. Real quick, before we get to all that, though, I mentioned the Royals. Our Royals bet 17-1 for most wins in the month of July took a massive hit yesterday. Royals were up 4-3 against the Diamondbacks. One out, nobody on. They're trying to close it out in the top of the ninth. And this is one of these baseball things, man, that you just shake your head and you're like, is this really... And there's nothing you can do about it where the umpires get involved. So James MacArthur is in pitching for the Royals. Again, one down, nobody out. Gurriel Jr. singles. And then Geraldo Perdomo steps up. And there's a pitch mid-at-bat which gets called a strike, and he starts arguing with the umpire to the point where it's like, hey, if you argue anymore, he might toss you. All right, so I think it made it a 1-2 count. It gets it to 3-2. Then MacArthur throws a pitch that is clearly a strike for strike three, but because probably that previous argument earlier in the at-bat, the ump doesn't want to deal with Perdomo, ball four. And it might have been a strike him out, throw him out, double play to end the game. Because Bobby Witt had the ball well in time.
Yeah.
Who knows? But it might have been. Anyway, you know what happens after that. Crunch time. They go crazy. Arizona with a Gabriel Moreno, two RBI double. And then they bring in a new pitcher. No, actually, it was still MacArthur. My bad. Carroll singles, and then Ketel Marte with just a three-run jack, and it was over. Royals did get two in the bottom of the ninth, but they lose at 8-6, and the point of this is we don't have that many more games to get to where we needed to go, and we might hit – by the way, we're the Royals, in this case. The Royals fall to 9-8 in the month of July. Had they won that, they're still in it because – the Yankees refused to beat the Mets, so that was the real problem up at the top. The Mets are actually in the first position here in the most wins in the month of July market, which both Circa and William Hill Caesars are good enough to put up every month. Mets, 13-7. You got four teams with 12 wins. The Rangers are 12-6. Then the D-backs now, Pirates and Tigers, all 12-7. Think about that. You got Mets, Pirates, and Tigers up there. I shouldn't put the Mets in that category because the Mets almost won June. Then you have the A's at 11-7, the Astros 11-8, and then the Royals. By the way, you skipped a few teams here. You skipped a bunch of 10-win teams. So the Royals are actually in 13th place. They're not that close to the top. Point is, you're four wins behind the Mets, and the Mets have one more game to play than you do. So it would take a miracle at this point, and a whole bunch of teams in between. Had you won last night, different story, because the Royals' schedule is, I mean, because when you say, oh, the Royals would have to go 6-0, the Royals could very well go 5-1 or 6-0. They got three home against the Cubbies and then three at the White Sox, and they're great at home. But last night was probably a death knell. We've gotten to the final game, if not the final out, or winning it in our previous months. I don't know if we'll get to the final day this time around after last night. So that was sucky, and it's when the umpires get involved, there's nothing you can do. There's no recourse. There's no replay on balls and strikes. Kelly, I'm not sure if you're aware of that.
Man, it's just listen to you talk about that. It is it's like the number one thing I feel like everybody collectively hates about sports. And if I was like a peewee or a high school coach, I'd be like, I don't care what sport. Like, you almost got fouled on that drive to the basket. Yell at the ref for 5 minutes because he's going to make up for it later in the game. It's just a part of sports.
You can make a case that they won the game because Perdomo argued with
that
umpire.
Sure, absolutely.
Let's go to tennis. So in the middle of the night, I want to get this in too. Middle of the night, they gave the Olympics men's and women's draw. They put that out. Real quick, Kelly, because I'm going to anticipate your question. This is all we know about the format for the Olympic tennis draw. Men's and women's singles draws both feature 64 competitors. Men's and women's doubles, 62. 16 players seated in singles.
Okay.
Remaining players thrown into brackets. Where practical, no two players from the same country are placed in the same quarter of the draw, which is an odd thing, but it's the Olympics, so countries matter. Seedings based on the latest international rankings. Yet, once you do the seedings and then you throw everybody in, obviously when you do the throw with everybody in part, you're going to get some weirdness. And here are the headlines. First of all, Jannik Sinner pulled out.
Wait, so how many total players will be in there? 64 in a bracket?
It's 64 total players.
Gotcha. Okay.
64 total players. 16 of whom are seated.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's the deal. men's side, Jannik Sinner pulled out with an injury. He's not participating, which means the big three go to the big two. It's Alcaraz, it's Djokovic. The biggest quirk of all of this, Rafa Nadal got placed so close to Djokovic that if they both win their first round matches, they're playing in the second round. This is Rafa Nadal's swan song, and you put him, oh, you got to step in and make that not happen. This poor dude, by the way, Philippe Chatrier, he's won 14 French Opens, you never know. But he'll have to play Djokovic in the second round, so that's brutality right there. But if you break down the quarters, and I just did real, you know, did scribbles, real quick jotting down notes, Djokovic still the favorite in that quarter. Obviously, Nadal would be the quirky one, but man, he could be out soon, quickly rather. Q2 is Zverev and Fritz. I don't think there's much, you know, harm to much challenge to them meeting in the finals there. Q3, Rude and Medvedev probably. Q4 is the one. It's Alcaraz's quarter. A bunch of clay court specialists, but they shouldn't give him any trouble ultimately. So the men's is straightforward. Alcaraz, I know you have a bet on him. I have a bet on him at small plus money. With Sinner out now, he's -125, and there's nothing really to threaten that. Women's side, where Iga is justifiably the overwhelming favorite. She, on her half of the bracket, her quarter, first of all, features Ostapenko, her kryptonite, Wozniacki, and Danielle freaking Collins. Q2, still on her half of the bracket, Rybakina, who may pull out, Osaka, Karolina Mukova, Leila Fernandez, and Zheng Xinwen. Mukova would be a Q2. If anyone puts out quarters, Karolina Mukova Q2 would be a play for me.
Ooh.
The real play? Coco Gauff got the best of it. She's all alone chilling in Q4. Any good price on that, bet that. I haven't seen them yet. If they come out, fight it. Bet it.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The VSiN NFL betting guide is out now, and our all-new college football guide drops August 1st, 6 days from now. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and NFL seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats, trends, and power ratings, plus best bets on futures and season win totals. Sign up before the end of July and receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, and exclusive data like our betting splits all the way through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount price of just $175. The football special discount price expires on July 31st, so don't wait. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. Teasers and parlays. Gil, are we in the territory of making a brain-dead parlay with Carlos and Iga at the Olympics on Monday? Parlay would pay around plus 425 this morning, around plus 150 to plus 170. Even with Iga's tough draw, it seems like a bet. And yeah, let me just close that thought again on the women's side. Iga is, I mean, this is, again, she's won 4 French Open. She's 23 years old, for God's sakes. But they didn't do her any favors. Ostapenko, Wozniacki, Collins in her quarter on her half. Rybakina, if she plays, she might not. Osaka, remember, gave her the one just scary match at the French Open, Osaka. Karolina Mukova would be my Q2 play whenever you see that, if you see that. Leila and Zheng Xinwen. Q3 is Pagula Svitolina Krejcikova, Haddad Maia, Mira Andreeva, Jasmine Paolini, who remember Iga beat in the finals of the French Open. And then Q4 is just Coco living by herself. Coco got the most ridiculous best of this. So again, if you see him, Coco Q4, I would say Karolina Mukova in Q2. This is from Michael Burns. Real man buys gold chains and unbuttons, he says.
I like that.
Vegas.
I like that answer.
Vegas regular. I also think, he says about the Royals game. He says, I also think Salvador Perez blocked the umpire as he was preparing to throw. Tough break.
Coco -110.
Oh, my God. Where is that?
MGM.
Here?
I don't know. I'll check. Colorado it is, though.
Pound away. We don't have it. I guarantee we don't have it here, do we?
Matt Hicks says he has it here.
Oh, let's go.
That's our director.
Are we still on air for another hour and 45 minutes?
It's our great director, Matt Hicks, by the way.
That's an insane line, by the way. Jamie Leva. The second button is the key button. It literally makes or breaks the shirt. Look at it. It's too high. It's in no man's land. That's a quote. The opening segment of a numbers game is like a box of chocolates. You just never know. Have a great day, gentlemen. Thank you.
It bothers me with every single shirt. That's why, like, you've got, like, your four or five or six favorite shirts because the second button actually works.
Right. This shirt. See, and then people are like, oh, Gil always wants to show his chest. First of all, I don't have any chest hair. Just want to point that out.
Everybody gets it. It's also part of the you know, we always talk about the height of the desk. It's just little different.
Laptop
here.
Cuts you.
Everybody gets it who does shows.
Not one time at the South Point did anybody ever make a comment about
it. Right, like Ben Wilson got it last week. JVT was tweeting in about Ben Wilson's chest hair last week. So it happens with everybody.
New York Mets 16. Gil, I have the A's. Most wins in July, 125-1. Do you really?
I like it.
Kelly, say what you want to say to him.
Well, I would tell this to his face. What? How many other tickets do you have, though? That would be the question.
Come on, New York Mets 16. We bet one team here. Is that the only team you bet? He says they are number one in average, OBP slugging, and OPS. I was looking at their pitching and having the Angels 10 times, but their hitting has been a huge plus. They have been amazing this month. By the way, doing these beyond these bets, doing these and tracking the records month by month shows you how the perception of folks is sort of lags behind team performance. So, like, the average fan will be like, oh, A's not good, Tigers not good, Pirates not good. Yet, they are, and I know it's still a smallish sample size, but, like, the Mets have been great for two whole months. By the way, the other side holds true. The Yankees stink. Like, they've stunk since mid-June. The Orioles actually might not be as great as we think they are. They can't get any distance between themselves and the Yankees. The Dodgers have been really bad, too. Sorry. Like, they just have been. By the way, Robbie Ray, nice performance yesterday for the Giants. If the Giants can sneak in and you get Logan Webb and Robbie Ray, and if Blake Snell could ever find his 2023 self, oh, man. Last one here. Brian M., using the dirty word again, for UFC, I like to throw a small parlay on home favorites when they're against another country or someone from a different state because of the chicanery involved in decisions. Sweet Lou coming up. Talk UFC with us. All right, NFC South, Kelly. Do you want to start at the top or the bottom? Your choice. Let's start at the top. No, your choice.
Start at the top.
Okay. The thing about, and again, this is, I will just say this. I am immersed in the FTN Almanac. So I am going to rely on them because that's the week we're in. And they do, obviously, 32 teams like everybody else. This is Aaron Schatz's FTN Almanac. He was kind enough to come on earlier this week. 31 of those 32 teams is like this intense breakdown of every personnel position, right? Offense, defense, every level of the offense and defense. Though we don't usually say levels for offense, I get it. With the Falcons, they don't even bother. It's just an entire thing on the madness of picking Michael Penix Jr.
It's all it is.
They don't talk about anything else, except for the fact that the Falcons defense is way worse than you think it is. They have the Falcons defense ranked dead last in the National Football League. Now, could that still be enough to win the division? Maybe, but they don't see it that way. They don't think the Falcons are winning the division. The whole thing with Penix, and let me just read, I want to read just verbatim what they say. Ready? On the one hand, the Penix pick can be justified by saying they invested in a promising second quarterback, which is a move championed by close to a third of the current teams in the league. You know, you get that backup quarterback, sometimes it helps. RG3, Kirk Cousins being a great example of that, right? They recognize that a fourth quarterback taken is often better than the fourth quarterback in his class, but it still remains by picking Penix eighth instead of trading back to take him, they showed their hubris. They're overconfident in their Penix evaluation when history shows that positional draft order is pretty random, and they were overconfident in the current roster, believing they could compete for a Super Bowl despite a future-looking top 10 draft pick with what they invested in Penix. The Falcons have sabotaged their chances to win with Cousins. That's what we all said, right?
Yeah, and
that's what they did.
Like, the age matters. You know what I mean? Like, it still would be a... I would still have an issue with the pick. However, it would be a lot easier to explain if the guy was 21 years old that you were drafting.
Well, that's a great point, too. That if Cousins is able to stay uninjured and play a couple years, whatever, yes, he's in his late 20s, Penix is. Mm. But the point remains, your defense is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
You could have drafted a defensive player. You signed Kirk Cousins for all the money in the world. You squandered it by making that pick. Or at least you put it all behind the eight ball. Why'd you do that? So that's their thoughts on Atlanta. The team that they have winning this division, though, is the New Orleans Saints, which he talked about. He thought that was a great bet to win the NFC South at plus 340. Now, this is also not a case for, hey, the Saints are a legitimate Super Bowl contender. They do not contend that. This is the worst division in all of football, where a team like Tampa Bay last year could just be kind of good when they needed to be, and they won the division. So with the Saints, remember, they were 5-7 last year, and then Carr turned a corner. Derek Carr, 10 touchdowns in 4 weeks. They won 3 of 4 to close December. And they make the case that Derek Carr is actually misunderstood, that he can pin his near yard drop in yards per attempt from 2019 and 2020 to 2022 and 23 on a corresponding fall in his average yards after the catch. In other words, what he's saying is he had Darren Waller injuries and Hunter Renfro hitting the wall when he was in Vegas. He had Olave and Shaheed as his nice young receivers in New Orleans, but they're more crisp route runners. They don't really stretch the field. They're not yak machines, as he said. He needed, Carr did, FTN contends, a vintage Michael Thomas, but he only really got a half season of him, and a vintage Alvin Kamara, but he's declined really ever since Carr showed up. And now they come in, and by the way, they were let down by Pete Carmichael. This is my biggest bugaboo. They're former offensive coordinator, because Pete Carmichael came from the Sean Payton system, and the way they put it is his offense was exactly like Payton's. He didn't change anything from what he ran under Drew Brees. And what they said about Carmichael is he knew why Payton's offense looked – he knew what it looked like. He didn't know why it looked the way he did. So Carmichael was letting Carr down as well. That's their contention. So they were really defending Derek Carr. Now it's Clint Kubiak in. He was the passing coordinator in San Francisco. He's the new OC. Obviously, he's a yak guy with Debo and George Kittle. But he's called plays before in Minnesota and in Denver briefly, and it wasn't very – like, it was mixed results. So we don't know. We don't know how it's going to go. But, and then there's Dennis Allen. Dennis Allen, 24-46, 5 seasons as a head coach. He still has his job after 5 seasons with that record. The Saints would have to go 11-6 for them to even give Allen a lifetime 400 winning percentage. And the defense, which has been perennial top 10, which is Allen as a defensive coach, they believe it's poised to drop back a little bit because Cam Jordan, DeMario Davis, Marshawn Lattimore, they're all getting older. The bottom line is, though, and we talked about this even with those of us who are a little down on the Eagles, and we're saying, I might be right about the Eagles, they still might win that division. They think, even with the warts, the few that we mentioned, that the Saints are the best team in that division. Again, defending Derek Carr as they did. So they would make the Saints plus 340 a bet to win the NFC South, not your Atlanta Falcons. We'll talk more NFC South. Lou Finicaro on UFC 304 next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game, live from Bar Canada here at the D, the lovely D, majestic downtown Las Vegas. Don't let anybody tell you any differently. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. A couple things here happened off air. One, again, we were discussing the shirt. I just want to show people, again, no one ever said anything when I was at the South Point. You know why? So here's the shirt, right? See where the laptop cuts it off? Now watch. If you could see all of me, right? You wouldn't say that about the shirt because you'd be like, oh, yeah, that's normal. But here, you have no idea, right? That could go down to my belly button.
It could go on forever.
Yeah.
Richard Jefferson. See, and then there's also like we are in bar chairs. So
yes.
Like how many times the camera cuts me and I just look like I'm like chilling or look like it or we go into Larry King mode where it's like
totally.
Yeah, right down here.
I heard you you quit your show, right? You didn't get canceled. So there was that. And then, God bless him, we love this man. Lou Finicaro joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, at Gambaloo, G-A-M-B Lou on Twitter. They're not booing. They're just chanting Lou out there. Lou, I'm not going to say what it was, but we were talking football because you have, you know, we're going to talk UFC here. But you've got opinions in all kinds of sports. You do playoff hockey. Obviously, you're betting football. You're betting baseball. And you had an opinion that you necessarily didn't want to talk about. Do you have any baseball or football opinion that you would like to share before we get into UFC 304? Is there something that you firmly believe in or are thinking about betting that we should know about?
Baseball, not quite yet, because I wait and use the 162-game season for data for the playoffs. So I just play I just bet on playoff baseball outside of season totals and such. As far as football is concerned, I'm almost done with my due diligence. I have some ideas. What we mentioned was I thought that it's possible with a brand new regime coming into Atlanta that maybe they're taking a 2 or 3 year term trying to build this team, and they don't necessarily look through the same microscope everybody else does, thinking that they must win year one. I don't know that that's Atlanta's plan. I don't think that's how they're building this. That's what I take from the Penix draft. In the UFC right now, I'm running about 48%, which is profitable, which means I'm missing 52% of my picks, and this one could be one of those 52.
I like what you did. You gave a football opinion that you didn't want to talk about, and you quickly transitioned to UFC. I took the cue. All right, UFC 304 is why Lou is here. By the way, I hope Atlanta feels that way about what they did, because otherwise I don't know what they're thinking. I don't think it's correct, but we can respectfully
disagree. I need them to
disagree.
Win now. Hey. Who do I got to call? Win now.
You have bets.
I made a bet. Yeah.
All right, let's start at the top. Let's start with the main here, Lou. Leon Edwards, Bilal Muhammad, they fought before, right?
That's correct. They fought before a couple of years ago. We have a line on that. At close, Leon was minus 280. When this fight opened, Leon opened closer to 210 or 220, and he opened 225 to be exact. And why would he, after painting Bilal Muhammad's fence in the first fight, why would that opening number come a little bit lower? That's a little intriguing. Both fighters are undefeated since. Both fighters have looked awesome since. Both fighters have earned their way into this fight, even though I don't think Leon really wanted to give Bilal the chance. Leon's younger. He's taller. He's longer. He's gotten confidence from the championship. However, I can't get out of my mind the fifth round against Usman and Leon's coach screaming at him, pleading with him to get busy and get with it. Now, he did land the kick to Usman that changed history. But shy of that kick, where are we now? I think... I've been on Leon Edwards for many, many fights. I like him. My heart likes him. I want to like him in this fight, but something's holding me back. And what's holding me back is the fact that Bilal Muhammad has one way to win this fight. He's not going to outstrike Leon. He could out-wrestle him. But what he can do is try and make him quit or succumb. Bilal Muhammad's single point of focus in this fight will be to attack Leon Edwards like a blitzing linebacker and force him to defend for 25 minutes. And hopefully sometime before the 25th minute, Leon will gas and Bilal can find a way into winning the fight via finish or finding a way to get his hand raised via decision, which I think is going to be close to impossible in England, where Edwards is from. I like Bilal Muhammad in this fight. I like his price. I like how he comes into this. And I think that Leon has climbed the mountain and now he's trying to stay there. And I'm going to go with the guy that's climbing the mountain and hasn't been there yet.
Okay. Bilal Muhammad at plus 210 right now. Lou will go more in depth on this, I would imagine, on the Bout Business podcast Friday. Yes?
Absolutely. It's also written up in an article on the digital magazine for VSiN.
Yes, it is. And at VSiN.com as well. You know what I love? The phrase most I loved about that little capsule there was he said Edwards painted his fence the first time
I
around.
I got that as well.
I've never heard that before. Kelly, I'm going to paint your fence after this. All right. Okay. So you like the dog there, plus 210. Let's go to Aspinall and Blades, also on the main card here. Here's all I know. And again, my casual UFC knowledge. Blades is the dude who has no chin, right?
Blades is one area of improvement, and unfortunately, in the fight game, Gil, you're dead right. You can't improve a porcelain beak, and if he gets flushed on the face, he goes. And in his four UFC defeats or so, he's fought big, structured, powerful power strikers that have caught him and put him out. What's Aspinall? He's a big, fast, quick, explosive, precise power striker. And so clearly Aspinall's going to try and find a way to touch Blades. Blades must find a way to eliminate that or take that away from Aspinall. So he's going to have to do his best to slow dance at the high school prom with Tom Aspinall. He's going to have to get in close, get his arms around him, press him against the fence, try and take him down. And if he can get this fight to the ground and be on top, then Curtis Blades has a great opportunity in this fight. When this fight, also a rematch, Gil, was lined the first time, it was opened as a pick. Wow. Aspinall closed minus 140. And Blades has improved since the first fight. Aspinall has surely improved as well, but he's come off that knee injury. So this line, looking at it right now, Blades plus 300. I think you'd be crazy not to take a stab at Blades. Fortunately, we were active on this opening line when it was Aspinall open in this fight, 210. So we caught Aspinall way closer to 210 than we did the minus 380. And so I got to speak out of both sides of my mouth. Our bet is on Aspinall, but if you're looking at this price right now, you got to bet Blades, in my opinion, and hope for the best. And to bet on a heavyweight with a glass jaw in the UFC against a skilled, quick, fast Aspinall, who I think could be the champion for a long time, is a dubious proposition.
So just clarifying, the bet then is...
The bet would be for me, if you're looking for value, you take Blades at 300. There's no bet for me. If I were to bet this fight right, if I were to bet this fight now, I'd be forced to have to look at Blades, and I don't want to do that.
You don't want to do that with a, quote, porcelain beak, unquote, necessarily.
That's correct.
Kelly, do not paint my fence with my porcelain beak.
That's another good one. That's another good one I hadn't heard.
All right, Lou, you like one on the prelim. This is the proverbial must-win situation between Modestus Bukauskas and Marcin Prochniow. What do you got here?
Couple of guys on the edge of their UFC careers, both highly motivated. Bukauskas, primarily a stand-up striker, but not a lot of volume, throws some kicks. Prochniow, there's two snapshots of Prochniow. When he first got into the UFC, and he was a punching bag and very unskilled, but since then he's improved. His volume is good, he's got good power, and he's won two of his last four, and the two losses were against really solid competition. I think this is a really good opportunity for Prochniow as a plus 130 underdog to go in there, more than likely a decision. This is going to be a fight where Prochniow is going to outland Bukauskas 2-1, and I think this will be an easy decision. I don't want to say it like that. I think this could be an efficient decision for Prochniow.
Okay, I like it. All right, so dogs in both the main event and here with Prochniow as well. Gambloo, G-A-M-B, Lou is where you can find L-O-U, of course, is where you can find Lou on Twitter. The Bout Business podcast drops every Friday, VSiN contributor. And I just want to say on the way out, Lou, because Kelly and I have talked about this off air, that you are the consummate gentleman in an arena handicapping where people like to snipe at each other for whatever reason. You are always a gentleman. If Jordan is on, you're retweeting his appearances, and we notice that kind of thing, and we just love you for that, man.
Thanks so much. Jordan's on my team with Dave Ross and the rest of the guys from First Strike that we hope to rekindle soon enough.
There you go. Lou, getting it in. Thank you, Lou. Appreciate it. We'll come back. More NFC South on the other side.
VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game, live from Bar Canada at the D, the Shield at the D. We're in the we're on the second floor corner. Funny smells coming through the air right now. It's a little lotion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we don't know where it's coming from.
Nope.
Look at that. Look at that. Look at that table. Look at that shield. There's Kelly Bidlin on the left, everybody. By the way, New York Mets 16, Scott. He did show his ticket. He actually has the A's at 200-1 for most wins. 200-1.
I kind of like it. So he did the A's and the Angels. He said because they play each other 10 times during the month.
Not a bad strategy.
Yeah, not a bad strategy. I like it.
Just to, again, update, the Oakland A's trailing right now by, let me see. Because you have the Mets right now in the catbird seat with an extra game to play at 13-7. 13-7, very sort of parody-filled month of baseball. They're 13-7. The A's are two back at 11-7. But the Mets have seven games left. The A's have six games left. There's four teams in between them. There's a shot. 200-1, man. Like your ticket. Better than the Royals right now, that's for sure. All right, back to the NFC South. So again, I don't know if you wanted to chime in on anything we've done so far, but the headline so far, FDN Almanac, Aaron Schatz is FDN Almanac. They don't like the Falcons. They don't like the Falcons to finish second either. They like the Saints first and the Buccaneers second, then the Falcons. Which is, again, Falcons are lined at 9.5 wins. They're minus 120 in the betting market to win the NFC South. The Buccaneers and Saints are both at 7.5 wins, season win totals, plus 320, plus 340, respectively, at DraftKings, Bucks, and Saints.
Yeah, I think with the Saints, I mean, I think they got major concerns on the offensive line. I do expect the defense to be a little worse. I think that I love guys like I don't think Kamara's over the hill yet. I think Chris Olave is awesome. I think he's going to be awesome. I just think how much of a change in coordinators is going to change what we saw last year with that offense that I thought was really stale and boring.
Yeah.
That was my big question.
That was his point, too, right? They're
yeah.
super boring. The Saints are good, but super boring. And they defend Derek Carr.
I will say, when we talked about this yesterday with like the Ravens and the Lions about like how, like, I think the Saints are pretty locked into. It's hard for me to see them having lower than like six wins. It's also hard for me to see them having more than like 10.
The point of all of these teams, and let's throw the Panthers for last, but we'll get to them because the Panther stuff, like, we had no idea. We knew, but we had no idea.
Right.
The point of all this is, these teams are all good enough to win the division. None of them are good enough to win the Super Bowl, right? Which is not a shocking headline to anybody.
I think I'll agree with that. I bet the Falcons small to win the division. I do have them kind of circled to look in season because they do start off, I think, Eagles and Kansas City. They get relatively early. But, like, that schedule is – I mean, they have the – like it's by far the easiest schedule in the NFL, and I think that matters.
The
Falcons. I mean, Kansas City, Philly, Dallas you're talking about, but then it's – I mean, it's Washington, Denver, Las Vegas, the Giants, and the whole rest of the NFC South. And I just expect them to beat up on a bad division.
Here's the capsule on the Buccaneers. Remember, the Buccaneers are the defending NFC South champs. Mm-hmm. And let's remember how they won this. They won this coming into a year where they're like, all right, let's pay the piper for all the Tom Brady stuff, right? And they're like, they're not expecting to win the division. They replaced eight starters from week one of 2022, six of them on offense. They started the year with $81.5 million in dead cap space. They could have voided years. They could have converted salaries into guarantees. Instead, they decided, we're taking our medicine. And they still won the division. They started 4-7. They rattled off five wins in their last six games to have a winning record and win the NFC South. From December onwards, Tampa Bay ranks 17th in DVOA on offense, 7th in defense. Yeah, you know, those numbers are okay. Good enough to win this division. They found a couple things they did well. They stayed on the field on third downs. They didn't throw interceptions. Baker didn't. And they kept opposing teams out of the end zone. Football can be really simple if you're competing against three other teams in your division that aren't good at all. So basically they did just enough on the margins to win more than they lost. They wouldn't have won any other division doing that, but they won the South. And again, football FDN's Almanac has them finishing second behind the Saints. With a just below average projected DVOA. Now, here is the thing about the Bucs last year, and you will remember this. They were terrible on first and second down. This is the thing. Dave Canales, right, who's now the Panthers head coach, really really unimaginative. So Tampa Bay, basically 52% of their sets of downs, 52% ended up reaching third downs. Only the Panthers and Giants were worse in that category. So more than any other winning team, for instance, Tampa Bay had the record for that last year. 52% of their sets of downs got to third down. So they kept putting themselves in difficult situations. This is like the Blake Snell of offenses in the NFL. Yeah. They kept putting themselves in difficult situations, and then Mayfield would bail them out with a bomb to Mike Evans or Chris Godwin, or, you know, Rashad White would break one all of a sudden, and so they would matriculate the ball down the field. There's your first matriculate of the year. So when Mayfield delivered, they would win. When he didn't, they would lose. It was kind of that simple. But, you know, what do we say in baseball? It's completely unsustainable. So they bring in, you know, so Canales goes now, and you wonder if that will change. But here was the thing about Canales, and this drives the analytics people crazy. We'll transition to the Panthers from this, as he's now their head coach. But, like, if you've read Aaron Schatz's almanacs for the 20 years that I have since his inception, maybe not 20, but most of those years, Canales says this. This is a quote. "We are efficient in the pass game because we run on first downs." And then he says, that was like, and if you've read this, like, that's the most non-provable thing, right? Like, that, it's just like, that's not how football should be played. And it's not, it doesn't bear out the way he's saying it. So there's that. And, you know, they do retain Levante David and Antoine Winfield, the Bucks. This is on their defense. But no,
but they lose.
No Shaq Barrett. Yeah. Carlton Davis traded away. So, anyway, pass rush looks like the weak part of the defense, but they do have at least one star, Vita Vea, on one level of the defense, Levante David, Antoine Winfield. So they have that. Anyway, they got him finished second. As far as Carolina, let's get to that, and Dave Canales now being their head coach. This is one of the most, just like, you burst out laughing reading this. So we knew that the Bryce Young experience was bad. Let's quantify it. They called it arguably the most demoralizing rookie campaign in the 104-year history of the NFL. Let's start there.
I mean, really hard to argue.
His passing DYAR, that's their other stat, third worst ever recorded. Just beaten out by the rookie years of Josh Rosen, the chosen one, and David Carr. And we know David Carr to be the poster child of getting sacked.
Man, Josh Rosen was worse his rookie year?
Yeah, that's what it says here.
I'm actually kind of surprised by that.
But wait, there's more. Sixth all-time with 62 sacks taken, third all-time with 477 yards lost on those sacks. And then when he did manage to get the ball off, his 9.1 yards per completion was the ninth lowest ever. If you take the sack yards away from his completions, pardon me, he netted just 4.1 yards per dropback. Adjusted for ERA, that's the 10th worst season ever. Had to adjust it to make it 10th. Not that his 5.5 yards per attempt without sacks was much better. That's one of the 20 worst seasons of all time, adjusted for ERA. So, by the way, only the 2010 Jimmy Clausen-led Panthers managed to slip below last year. So it was, and that puts that season for the Panthers bottom 30 all time, both overall and on offense. History of the NFL. Team was so uncompetitive, you'll recall, they didn't lead for 1 second of any fourth quarter. You want more? Both of their wins came on field goals as time expired. Now, remember, we hit on this show.
I forgot about that.
We hit on this show the last winless at 15-1, and everybody's like, now in retrospect, it's like, of course they were. You remember they were plus 450 to win the division.
Yep.
Like, they weren't that big of a dog. And yet, they, by the way, the other part about this is, again, just reviewing what they traded to trade up to get Bryce Young, they traded the number 9 and 61 overall picks last year, the number 1 pick this year, their second rounder next year, DJ Moore, and then to add insult, CJ Stroud gets picked next and goes crazy. And then the owner, David Tepper, reveals in late November that the original plan was to trade up to 2 to draft Stroud. Anything else?
Well, and Dave Tepper's going to go into your place of business and rip down any signs you have speaking bad
That's
against
right.
the team or anything like that.
And now it's Dave Canales, who, again, yes, did Baker play well under him? He did. Did Geno play well under him? Geno Smith? Yes. And Russell Wilson had the highest DVOA of his career under Canales. But he's super unimaginative. So the Panthers' whole thing is we actually are going to let our defense, our one strength, you know, one modicum of strength go, because we're going to surround Bryce Young with everything. They have the highest payroll offensive line in the history of the NFL. They need to know this year and this year, that's it. Is Bryce Young their quarterback of the future? Because you can have a bad first year, right? But they need to know if he's, and they're going to give him everything he needs this year with all the protection. And their whole defense is gone, man.
Yeah, you're talking 6 new starters on the defensive side of the ball.
Ryan Burns, Frankie Louvu, Jeremy Chin, Dante Jackson, Von Bell, they're all gone.
Guess what, Gil? I'll say real quick on both those teams, because I don't have bets on either. I expect the Panthers to be better, but that's really easy to say when they have 2 wins.
To say.
And I don't expect the Bucks to be as good.
And you still got the Falcons winning the division. Yes. Yep, despite what they said. Okay. There's your NFC South. Bill Krakenberger, unscripted on the other side, exclusively on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.